Usually, radio announcements merely recommend a product, but this station provides its clients with a special service.
You are listening to the Faces for Radio podcast.
Fun and information are two sides to this podcast.
Here's Pat Egan.
Now that's a face for radio. Follow me
into the jungle. Well, the MLB draft is one day away. It's Thursday at 7 p.m. And the Phillies hold the number one pick for the first time since 1997 when they selected Pat Burrell. I am joined by 97.5's morning show host, John Marks, who we know him on Twitter as Minor League Marks. How are you?
What's going on, man? Yeah, you would think that I would be the guy that would have the least amount of interest in minor league baseball. But in fact, other than you, I may have the most at the station.
You might have more than me.
True.
It's quite impressive, actually. So the Phillies hold the number one pick, and it's not a consensus Bryce Harper year, Steven Strasburg year. It's one of those years where it could really go anywhere. There's a couple players that it could be. Jason Groom is one. He's a local left-handed pitcher out of Barnegat University. The other kid is A.J. Puck, who is a pitcher out of Florida. Kyle Lewis, an outfielder out of Mercer, you know, Mercer College, I believe?
Mercer College.
Yeah, okay. Those are the three really being talked up. Where do you want them to go?
Well, and I'll tell you the one guy that you're missing who, as it stands right now, looks like it's going to be. His name's Mickey Moniak.
Yeah, I knew there was one guy that I couldn't think of.
It's weird because early on in this process, I think a lot of people, and you said it, Pat, when you have the number one overall pick, you're hoping that you get a generational guy, that you get a hands down, he's the number one pick. And it's not really that guy this year. So there's a couple guys that jumped out of you right away. Groom from Barnegat, local kid, has top of the rotation type stuff, but he's a high school pitcher. So it went from everybody thinking the Phillies are going to draft him to A.J. Puck, who's the big 6'7 left-handed starter from Florida. But then he kind of stumbled this year.
Yeah, he hasn't solidified himself what the Phillies wanted. He's been very
has 2 wins on a team that's won over 50 games for Florida, and his ERA is decent. He has a lot of strikeouts, more walks than I'd like, but he hardly dominated collegiate games, and that's something if you want the number one overall pick. His command has been an issue a little bit. I still think he has a chance. He also has a chance not to do anything at all, which you clearly don't want out of the number one pick of the draft. So they're the two guys that it looked like it was. Then it looked like it was going to be to Kyle Lewis, who you mentioned is an outfielder for Mercer. And he's big, tall, athletic, 6'4", outfielder, has a chance to have some power. But is he a top pick? His competition was weak. He played in the Cape Cod League, which is a summer league where they play with wooden bats. He performed very well there.
And that means a lot to me, by the way. If you perform high in the Cape Cod League because you're so used to playing with the aluminum bats that if you can hit with the wood bat, that to me gives me a little bit more bonus than if a guy just tears up college baseball.
Definitely makes you feel a little bit better. So then you had him that looked like maybe Kyle Lewis is going to be the top pick. Blake Rutherford was another outfielder. He's a young 19-year-old now. It was talked about maybe being a top five guy. Who knows? But Mickey Moniak. So listen to this, Pat. 6'2", 190, outfielder, high school. High school outfielder, bats left, throws right, average arm, quick, fast, covers a lot of ground, but he's got the sweet left-handed swing. And when you look at him, and again, you're projecting an 18-year-old that's playing against high school competition from the San Diego area, but he looks like he's a 300 hitter with power potential. When you look at him, he's your number three hitter of the future. Today, as it stands here, the day before the draft, it looks like that if you look at a lot of the mocks, Baseball America, they think that he's going to be the guy that goes.
Which is surprising because of the fact that, you know, for a while, as you said, it was Jason Groom, and then all of a sudden it's A.J. Puck and Kyle Lewis's name. And that's how unpredictable this draft has been, where it seems every day it's seemingly changing. Last year, it seemed like the Phillies were to go after a college bat. They go after Cornelius Randolph, the high school kid from Georgia. So it wouldn't shock me if they went after another high school kid in the draft, but I expect it to be a bat. One of the reasons I would expect them to draft a bat is because they've stocked their system so much with pitching in the past, a couple of years with trades and drafting and whatnot, that their system is really strong when it comes to starting pitching. But as you said earlier, A.J. Puck, it's just he would follow up one really good start with a bad start.
Yeah.
And I don't want that in a first overall pick. According to Jason Stark, he's willing to take a deal, and that might impact what the Phillies do. Because of signability issues.
Yeah, I think a lot of these guys right now. So here's how it works in the draft, if you don't know.
Yeah, we should probably explain it.
There's a slot that is given to a certain pick, a recommended slot. So it's not like the NBA where this is what you have to take because this is what you take. Major League Baseball just recommends a certain bonus or slot that you're going to pay this player. Now, we've seen in the past where some players come in that are like the Bryce Harpers or the Strasburgs, and they're saying, whoa, 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 you're going to pay us a lot more than whatever that slot's saying. In years where you don't have a top guy, they're a lot of times, like with the Phillies, you had mentioned that there's some conversations that are happening before the draft that are saying like, hey, listen, AJ Puck, or hey, listen, Kyle Lewis or Mickey Moniak, we like you, but we're not going to pay you $9 million a year if we select, or $9 million if we select you. So a guy like Mickey Moniak might say, yeah, that's fine. You give me five and then we'll be good. So what the Phillies will in turn do, they cut a deal with the first overall pick. Then they'll use that money, that $4 million or so, and they'll throw extra money at their second round pick. So what happens a lot of times, Pat, and you know this in the draft, is a player by Blake Rutherford. Blake Rutherford's 19 years old. He's a prep school bat, but he's a high school bat. He has five tools. He's another California kid. He's committed to play at UCLA. He's also 19 years old. So his leverage is, if you draft me, you better be ready to pay me a lot and more than where you draft
me. To give up that scholarship.
Otherwise, we're not coming out. So if you're going to draft Rutherford, you're going to have to pay him over what teams are going to want to pay him. So there's even talk he could slide all the way to the Phillies in the second round, which I don't believe. But he's not going to go in the draft likely where he should because, and this happens every year,
yep,
agents scare teams off by saying, if you don't pay him over what you're going to willing to pay him, don't take him because we're not going to sign. It's a Scott Boras tactic. It happens all the time.
Well, I think it was last year, Daz Cameron was a top five player in the draft, and he ends up sliding to the Astros in the, I think, supplemental rounds because of that exact reason. And for the Phillies, if you're not going to have a clear-cut number one, it would be wise to do that, to find a player who's willing to take less, to put it elsewhere. The big success story would be the Astros, and I think 2012 they drafted Carlos Correa, number one overall, who is a stud, but at the time it was a...
He wasn't the top player
in
the draft.
No, not even close. He was, I think, the seventh or eighth. I could be wrong. And then, but they used that money to draft Lance McCullers, who, oh, by the way, went one pick after the Phillies drafted Shane Watson.
So what they did was they said, hey, we're going to take you first because we like you, but since you're probably more like the 10th pick or the 8th pick, we're going to pay you what you would have gotten there. We want you, but we also want to use some of that money that would go to the number one pick. So that's what they did. And they took a guy that was, they call it, below slot. They paid him accordingly, and then they threw more money at a player that you needed to throw more money on at, or they weren't going to come. And it worked out for him. So look for the Phillies to do that. But Moniak, just to give you what this kid is, Pat Gillick's always been known as a guy that he loves to scout, and he loves to go see these draft picks, and he loves to actually see it with his own eyes. I know Charlie Manuel was checking him out too. But Pat Gillick, one of the games he went and saw him, he went 5-for-5 with 8 RBI and hit for the cycle. Gillick loves him. So that's why maybe he has went to the start or the front of the line, and I'm sure that the other people in the Phillies organization like him too. But as it stands right now, it looks like it could be this kid.
And that's pretty good pedigree to have if Pat Gillick likes you. I mean, his scouting has been, look, it's legendary. It's one of the huge reasons why the Phillies won the 2008 World Series, is scouting guys like Jason Worth and grabbing them off the scrap heap. So look for that. A guy that we're actually going to have on the station tomorrow, he'll be on with the midday show at 11, is Jonathan Mayo. So he will, I'm sure, will comment on,
oh, nice,
on what's going on with the draft picks. How about this, though? What if the Phillies drafted in the second round, a guy slips, Joey Wentz? I don't know anything about
Carson's
Joey Wentz,
brother,
but the fact that his name is Wentz, and he would be their big, you know, we're going to save money in the first round and go after a guy in the second round. They draft another Wentz.
Enough room in town for two Wentzes? I think it sounds like a pretty good story.
I don't know. Apparently, though, he wants $3.3 million to give up his scholarship to Virginia. So
if they like him, they should. I mean, it really is. It's how you can. And with Blake Rutherford, who is, again, part of the problem here is that a lot of these guys that you're getting, they're either shortstops or outfielders, because they're the best athlete on the team. The best athlete on the team, if he's not pitching, he's playing shortstop, yep, or he's playing center field. So I don't know exactly where Rutherford projects, but the depth right now of this Phillies organization, as far as position players, their best players are in the outfield, as far as guys that are in the minors right now. So not that you don't draft outfielders, because who knows how many of these prospects are actually going to make it.
Yeah.
But they have a lot of young guys that can play in the outfield right now coming up in the ranks.
Let me ask you, are you surprised that they have not been more attached to Jason Groom recently?
No, I'm not, because a high school pitcher, and it's tough, and it may not be fair, but when you're talking about long-term, a high school pitcher, and this kid has great stuff, when you're talking about a high school pitcher and you're looking at percentages, and I'm not trying to be Billy Bean here with Moneyball, but strict percentages, when you look at first round picks and you look at, or just in the draft in general, if you look at high school compared to college pitchers are more likely to make it to the majors and not be a bust. Groomies very easily could have a shoulder issue at 18, 19 years old. When you're 18 and you're throwing the ball in the mid-90s, that means that you've been training to throw velocity for a long time. A lot of people always ask, why are there so many Tommy Johns? Well, when your kid's 16 years old and you're taking him to some academy where he's throwing the ball 90 miles an hour and he's training to throw 90 miles
an hour. All year long.
Everything's a sharp breaking pitch or a cutter. What happens? Well, that ligament, of course, isn't going to be as strong, and it gets repaired, which it's okay. You can have Tommy John and come back and be good sometimes or most of the time or whatever, but if there's a shoulder injury, it's much less of a certainty to come back.
Yeah, so. But then you have guys like Jason Knapp, who the Phillies took. They used him in the Cliffley deal, and you know he was injured at the time when they traded him, and he never ends up pinning out. I am surprised just because of the fact that I feel like Groom would take less to go number one to his local team. He's also the number one ranked player in the draft. And he actually just committed to a community college. So if he really wants, he could go next year number one. The way this works, by the way, is if you go to a four-year college, you have to wait 3 years.
Unless
you go to a community college, you can go the next year.
And Blake Rutherford is 19, so he can go to a four-year university and come out after a second year rather than having to wait 3 years, which is what you have to do.
Kind of like the NFL in that way.
It is. So they want you to be a certain age. But yeah, it's interesting when you look at where Groom could fall. It's almost like he could fall out of the top 10, depending. I don't think he will, because he has a lot of talent. And if he's able to, he has top of the rotation stuff. So if he ends up working out, he has better stuff than Puck. But being that Puck has done it on the collegiate level, teams want to take him before Groom because he's at the collegiate level and he's shown it for two more years. It's a risk. Anytime you take a high school pitcher, it's a risk. Worked out with Cole Hamels, though, didn't it?
It certainly did. And he was actually injured. We're talking about injuries. He was injured at the time, and that's one of the reasons why he dropped in the draft to the Phillies. I think it's 16 or 17, one of the teens. All right, so the draft is Thursday, so it's tomorrow. We're recording this on a Wednesday. It'll be tomorrow at 7 p.m. Phillies hold the number one overall pick. But the future is looking extremely bright for the Phillies. After countless trades and whatnot, this farm system is extremely stacked, I would say. Who are some guys, because you're a huge minor league guy, who are some guys that are really sticking out to you?
Well, just kind of paying attention and looking at all levels, and obviously when you look at, and the short season, Williamsport and the Gulf League haven't really started yet. They're just starting right now. I think Williamsport starts really soon.
So they usually start right after the draft.
After the draft. So you're getting a lot of the players that were just drafted. You're getting a lot of the other guys that are still in a developmental stage. So you're getting young guys. But as far as Lakewood, Clearwater, Redding, and you almost look at AAA as it's half prospect, half depth for your organization. So you're getting a lot of older guys that are there in case there's injuries. And then you're getting guys like Nick Williams, who we'll start with him. Really, it's Nick Williams was thought by a lot of people like, 23 years old, fast track him. He could be in the majors because they're going to need outfield help. But when you go to AAA and you're not ready for the majors, it shows. And it showed this year. He didn't struggle to where he was batting 200, but right now is when looks like he's starting to figure it out. He's showing a little bit more power. So I like Nick Williams a lot. He's one of those free-swinging, doesn't get a lot of walks, probably hits a lot of his balls on mistake fastballs. Like, if I was pitching Nick Williams, I'd throw him a lot of junk. I'd never give him a fastball unless I really had to. He can hit the fastball, but a lot of the off-speed stuff is what he's struggling with right now.
Yeah, he's got
still
a hole.
Young player.
He's got a hole in his swing, and
yes.
I remember when the season started, Jason Stark. I think we had him on the station, and whoever the host was brought up, you know, well, what about Nick Williams? You had to start right off the bat. And he's like, whoa, pump the brakes here.
No.
Nick Williams has a hole in his swing, and as you said, it showed. I think he was batting .220 at the time. He's really struggling. Last 15 games, though, he is batting .383, six doubles, triple, four home runs.
Which is
12 RBIs. I mean, I'll take that over Peter Borges right now, who's been benched the last eight games.
It's promising because it shows you that he's made adjustments, and I figured that he was going to have a stretch where – when you're talking about AAA pitching, you're talking about guys that have played in the majors and not just pitching the majors, but pitching the majors a lot. You know, you have guys that are experienced. So if I'm a 30-year-old guy at AAA that spent time in the majors, what am I throwing a young guy that can hurt me with a fastball? I'm not throwing him a fastball on a fastball count. You kind of pitch backwards to him. He's figuring that out, and it's great to see what he's been able to do. It's still a young season. We're still only in the beginning of June. So I like Nick Williams. And I like how he's turning it around already. So if he continues to do this, you're going to see him next year in a Phillies uniform. I wouldn't rush him this year, though, Pat. I wouldn't. I hear you with Borges, but I need him getting at bats every
day. He's still struggling with lefties. I think he's hitting .252 or .253. I just don't want to see Peter Borges, I'll be honest with you. I'm just sick of...
Well, at this point, he's nothing more than a bench player because you signed the guy...
the Cuban guy. Yeah, but I... Reports are he's nothing. That guy's nothing.
Well,
more
he's
than
just
a bench
not.
Player.
He just like Borges. Just offensively, he's not a major league player.
No.
The reason he's there is because of defense and speed, and you hope that he develop into a hitter, but he just can't hit.
So who else do you have? I mean, Jorge Alfaro came back. I think he had a home run last night.
We'll stay at AAA with J.P. Crawford, who really...
Oh, how did I forget him?
Crawford hadn't had a good year in Reading. I mean, he started off quick, and then he didn't have much power. Didn't have a lot of extra base hits. Was doing well defensively, and you kind of saw him sitting there .250, .260. But one thing that you saw that impressed me more than anything was he was walking more than he was striking.
Yeah,
out.
I noticed the same thing.
So for a young player like Nick Williams, when you look at his walk to strikeout ratio, a lot of young players are like this. They're striking out, especially power hitters. They're striking out a lot, and they're not walking a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Which is okay. But Crawford, he's never going to be a 25 home run guy. You hope he's getting 8, 10 triples. You hope he's getting 30 home or 30 doubles, and he's getting his share of home runs. For a very young guy who's 21 years old, for a young guy, his approach at the plate this year has been unbelievable. He went to AAA, only a handful of games he's been at AAA, so it's really tough to judge him right there. But for a guy that was hitting .260 at AA, you look at his on-base percentage and what he's been able to do. He's a two-hole hitter. For anybody that's listening out there that thinks that Crawford's going to be an MVP-type candidate, he's not going to be a 30-home run guy. You're hoping he's a 300 hitter that really is great with his defense, and he gets lots of extra base hits.
I think fans just assume that he's going to be the next Jimmy Rollins because of the fact that he was drafted to be Jimmy Rollins' replacement, and they're two different players.
His approach is much different than Jimmy. Jimmy was never really interested in getting walks. I think it's great that you have a player that understands that on-base percentage really means something.
Yeah, because, look, I mean, walks aren't sexy. You know, if you're a 21-year-old, you want to hit the ball, you want to get base hits, so... He's hitting .169 right now in AAA. He is struggling. I think fans are just assume that he's going to be called up any minute now. He's got a ways to go.
But they are pushing him. I think I do think that the move, because you could ask, like, well, if he was still not struggling, but he wasn't doing great at AA, why wouldn't you keep him down there? And I think the answer is that they wanted to push him. They wanted to say, hey, JP, we think you've done a good job. I know that your average isn't 300 and you don't have 20 home runs or 10 home runs, but let's see what you can do with AAA because, hey, we're looking to bring you up. I mean, we think that you – when I see a player that gets what he's doing up there and his approach isn't I need to swing at everything, that excites me if I'm the Phillies. So I'm saying let's see what you do with AAA against the more experienced pitchers, and we'll see what he does. We will see. He's got some time. It's still early.
What about the pitchers at AAA? They got Jake Thompson. They have Zach Eflin. Eflin struggled a little bit recently. Thompson has actually been pretty good recently. And then Mark Appel, who's on the DL. Any of those guys get you pumped?
And now you have Lively that's up at AAA now. Again, they brought him up from AA, and he's pitching well. Jake Thompson has, I don't want to say an up-and-down year, but he definitely started off. And again, we're talking about a 23-year-old pitcher at AAA. He acquired him in the Cole Hamels trade. He was lights out in AA last year, so the move to AAA made a lot of sense. He had some struggles early on, and I actually like it because not everybody's going to be Cole Hamels. Cole Hamels breezed through the minors. I mean, he
dominated every level.
Dominated every level. Jake Thompson's not Cole Hamels. He has the chance to one day in the majors be as good as Cole Hamels, but I think it was good to see him struggle against guys, again, that have been in the majors and have to adjust. It's always good to see what a guy does when he faces some adversity, and he's pitched better of late. So what I'm seeing with him is that he's not ready to come up. Let him have a full year down there in September. If he's pitching better and you need a guy, you can do it. Adam Morgan at the major league level needs to be replaced. So if you're going to replace him, he's the one guy that's going to go. Where would you go? You mentioned Zach Eflin.
I was banging the Zach Eflin drum for a little bit.
Had a couple bad starts.
And then he has three or four bad starts. And
he doesn't have the great stuff. He has the stuff of a 4 or a 5. I don't want to call him a nibbler, but he's not going out there 95, 96. Like, he's a good pitcher. He knows how to pitch, but his stuff isn't overwhelming. Ben Lively, who was acquired, believe it or not, in the Marlon Byrd trade from Cincinnati, has better stuff, and he has more of a ceiling. They moved him up from Double A. He's still a younger guy, 24, and you look at him and say, all right, one guy, Alec Asher, who got crushed last year. I mean, I think he was 0-6 last year in 7 starts with a high ERA for the big club. He was pitching well for Triple A, and he went down with an injury. And then you mentioned Appel, who was acquired in the Ken Giles trade, former number one pick in the draft, blah, 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 blah. And he's on the DL because he had shoulder injuries. He was having trouble getting his velocity over 90 miles an hour before he got thrown on the DL. Started off the season pitching well. Last couple starts, terrible. You probably think it's because of the shoulder. He doesn't have swing and miss stuff. Like, I feel like he was getting lucky in a lot of those early season starts. So he'll pitch in the majors at some point, but I wouldn't count on him being a guy, a top starter in this staff in the future.
He was always a guy who, to me, he kind of just advanced based on the fact that he was the number one overall pick.
Yeah, correct.
And this was a guy who was supposed to be the number one overall pick the year we mentioned Carlos Correa. He was supposed to be that year, but he wanted way too much money. And the next year, he ends up dropping to the Astros number two, or number three. It was one of the two or three. But he was supposed to be the number one overall pick. If you look at his numbers, he's never really dominated any level he's been at. When they traded for him, I was excited just to see a change of scenery. A lot of scouts said he could benefit from a change of scenery. As you said, he did. But I think fans have an unlofty expectation of Mark Appel because he was the former number one overall pick. I don't see anything more than a 4 or 5 from him.
Yeah, that's about it. You see the ability, you see the talent. You see the raw physical stuff, and we were just talking about shoulders with Jason Groom. You have a shoulder injury, all of a sudden your velocity dips 4, 5, 6 miles an hour. I mean, that's a real concern, and you hope he's all right. They're calling it just a shoulder strain right now. But it's not just about velocity. There's a lot of guys that can throw 95, 96. It's about command. It's about throwing strikes. It's about not just throwing strikes, but working the corners. And Appel just hasn't had command. That's been his biggest problem since he started pitching. And you're right. If he's not the number one overall pick, he's never had the numbers that would make you fast track him to the bigs. But he's got the pedigree of being the number one pick. So you're right.
All right, let's dip down to Double A, where Dylan Cousins hits another home run, his 16th of the year last night. He is leading Double A in home runs with 16 home runs. Now, I know our favorite Keith Law is not quite a fan of him, but this is a guy who's having a really, really good year in his first year at Double A, which to me, I take a lot of stock in. It's a huge jump from Single A to Double A, and this guy is crushing the ball. He's sitting in the 280s, and he's got 16 home runs. What do you like from him?
All right, so Dylan Cousins, if you don't know about him or if you heard about him, just picture it. 6'6", like 235, he's in great shape. He's chiseled. I mean,
he was a football commit. At Arizona. I mean, that's what he looks like out there.
And he's got speed. So he's playing right field, bats left, throws left. He's playing right field. He has double-digit steals already. I know he has at least 10. I don't know if he's gotten one in the last few nights. But he's got double-digit steals. So he's a hell of a base runner. He's got speed. And like you mentioned, he had 16 home runs. Now, Ryan, and here's the other thing. The kid just turned 20. Is he 22 or 23? And I'm trying to pull
94. What is that?
So he's 22. He just turned 22 at the end of May. So you're talking about a guy, yes, You're talking about a guy that's 22 years old in Reading, and he's crushing the ball. Now, he's a 282 hitter. Maybe that's a little bit above what he's going to do in the bigs, but he's really, really come on this year. And his power was always there. Reading's a home run hitting park. It is, but a guy that I know, John Moses, who does the play-by-play for the Trenton Thunder, the AA Yankees affiliate that's in the Eastern League with Reading, said that the most impressive thing he's seen all year is Dylan Cousins, not just his power, but his power to opposite fields. It's one thing if you have a guy that's sitting on a pull fastball and hitting mistakes over right field. It's another thing to see a guy that has power to all fields. You saw that with Ryan Howard early in his career. He would hit as many balls to left field and center field as he did to pull. You're not seeing that kind of power to other fields with Cousins, but you're seeing that kind of power, and you're seeing a young player that this year has really started to get it. It's exciting.
Last year he hit 8 home runs. He's already doubled that amount. He's a guy who I was high on before this season, but right now I am just through the moon over, and I would love to see what he can still. I don't want to rush him. I don't want to take him to AAA yet. I want to see what he can still do at AA. And see if he can go through some of those growing pains. Like I, as you said earlier, you kind of like seeing guys struggle, and I do too, just to see how they react to it. He's a guy who's never really struggled too much. He's never dominated like this, but he's never like truly struggled. So I want to keep him there. Alfaro, though, goes 2-for-4 last night, 4 RBIs, hitting .324. He dealt with injury earlier on in the season, but still, I mean, .324 is .324. He was the big piece in the Cole Hamels trade. Catcher might transition over to first base. We don't know yet, but he's a guy who Philly
play outfield, but they're not going to need him to play outfield. But yeah,
they have so many outfield prospects. He's a guy who really is a guy you got to keep your eye on. What do you like from
Alfaro? Is
from Alfaro,
and again with these double A guys, it's JP Crawford will hit for a higher average than Cousins because he has a much better approach to the plate. We're talking about a power hitter with Cousins. With Alfaro, you're talking about super athletic. He's not going to have the power potential that Cousins has, but what he's going to have is he's going to have raw power and he's going to have real baseball ability, and that's what you're seeing with him. Higher average, maybe. Really, really promising. You got to give Ruben Amaro credit, even if he wasn't the one that was totally behind all of these trades, to be able to get what they got for Cole Hamels, who, by the way, is doing great down in Texas, and it's exactly what they needed. He's a really good
pitcher.
And I'm
happy to see it, too, because
me too.
You know, as you said, he breezed through the system and he dominated every year, but like 09.
09 was the first time that he ever faced really any adversity.
I did a show Sunday with James Seltzer where we kind of talked about how you don't appreciate guys in the moment. You kind of do it after the end. And it right now is making me appreciate how lucky we were to have Cole Hamels, a guy who you could just depend on every year to be your like definite ace. So I'm not to get off too much on Cole Hamels, but I'm happy to see him do well.
So it was a good trade for both teams, and Alfaro is really a guy that will help you for years to come, and he's got when they taught, see, you wouldn't want to move him away from being a catcher because he has the athletic ability to, and I hate to even bring up the name because other people do it, but they talk about like Pudge-type athleticism behind the plate. It's not just about athleticism. You got to know how to call a game. You got to know how to handle a staff. They're the things he's working on right now as far as being a catcher. So we'll see. He's a major league player, no doubt. You don't have to rush him.
Yeah, it's just a matter of time of when he gets here.
Matter of time. You move him up maybe to AAA later this season. If not, you start him in AAA next year. But he may be up in the bigs at some point next year.
I would expect him probably to be at least a September call up. I think if he doesn't get injured, he's probably at AAA right now. I think they just want to see more of him at AA.
If he was hitting the way he was hitting at a .500 clip when he hurt his oblique.
Yeah.
Again, he's got to be able to stay healthy, and that's nothing that he hasn't been able to do.
Nah, he was injured last year when they traded for him.
We can talk to we're blue in the face about this player, that player, how great they are. If you can't stay healthy, 162 games on a shorter minor league season, if you can't stay healthy, you're not going to be what you could be.
And a prime example of that is the outfielder Roman Quinn, who is dealing with yet another injury
right now.
He's got a hamstring injury. This is a guy who is absolutely electric when he plays, but he's really dealt with injury. He could be a 50 stolen base guy. He's hitting .289 this season at AA after really, really,
really
struggling.
He's
really struggling. And right now, he's one of those guys who it seems like every single game, if he gets on base, he's filling a bag. He's got 25 right now. I believe that's second in AA baseball. But he can't stay healthy. And this is a guy who we went down to the Arizona Fall League. He was one of the best players out there.
Yeah, he is.
But as we said, he can't seem to stay healthy.
Last year it was he blew out his quad. It was a muscle injury where he tore it.
Yeah.
And it cost him the whole season, and he was doing really well. He was at AA again last year. But this year, you got to remember, so what you're seeing with Roman Quinn is you're seeing a young player that was drafted out of high school with when you talk about scouting a player, there's a 20 to 80 scale, 80 being the highest. He's an 80 speed guy to where he's the best that you could be with speed. He reminds you almost of a young Jimmy when it comes to speed. He was a shortstop until they drafted J.P. Crawford. And they said, all right, dude, now you're a center fielder. He was also just a right-handed hitter. In the last two or three seasons, they moved him to being a switch hitter. This year, he's finally feeling comfortable with defense, with being a switch hitter, and kind of coming into his own. If he can't stay healthy, it's never going to work. And that's the biggest thing right now. I don't know if that means that he has to take better care of himself in the offseason. I don't know if that means he's going to have to train more. I'm not really sure because I can't tell you what he does right now.
Yeah, sometimes injuries just follow a guy. And he would have broken the Lakewood record for stolen bases. He was going to absolutely trash it the year he was there if it wasn't for the fact that he got injured.
He's your leadoff hitter of the future, and he's not a high walk guy like Crawford. He's not. He's more like Jimmy as far as, but he can hit. And here's what he's got, and it's probably a problem. He can hit home runs.
Yeah,
and almost the last thing you want is for a guy to know that he's got pop, because he's short like Jimmy, but he's powerful for his size. He is an extra base hit machine. Triples, doubles, and with the power. So when I'm looking at Roman Quinn, I'm saying, listen, man, you don't have to be a 100 walk guy, but you need to have 25 doubles, and you need to have 10 triples, and he can do that. 10 home runs, 10 triples, 35 doubles. He has got the potential. Got to stay healthy.
The one guy I want to move from AA, if there's anybody else that's sticking out to you too much. I mean, Rhys Hoskins is having a nice year. He's a first
13th
base
home run last night.
First base prospect. He was drafted at college.
He's only 23, I believe.
Yeah, double A is where the bulk of the prospects are.
Yep.
And so if you can get out to a game in Reading, it's definitely worth going to. The second round pick last year, Scott Kingery, he's only hitting 260, but he is second in all of like high A in doubles. So, you know, I know you're a big Josh Tobias fan, but
Josh Tobias plays for Lakewood, and he's old for the league. Scott Kingery, like you said, second round pick last year, older player.
Out of college,
but what he is, he may never be a 300 hitter, but what he is he's a gap hitter, and he likes to hit the ball the other way, and he can steal bases. He's a gamer. He's one of those baseball players. He has great baseball instincts from everything I'm reading. I don't get to watch a lot of Clearwater Thresher games other than what I can find online, and you can watch games online, but when you have a baby at home and watching the big club or whatever. So I do watch some archived footage, and he excites you because he knows how to play the game, and he's an extra. He hits a lot of extra base hits. So Kingery's your one guy in Clearwater that you're looking at, and you're like, yeah, he's gonna be with the big club in the future. It's just how long.
You don't look at Carlos Tochi like that.
Carlos Tochi, Pat Egan has been loving this dude since
like
he was like
4
11.
Years.
Yeah. Yeah, they got him out of Venezuela when he was 11. He still looks like he's 11.
He does. I mean, look, he's hitting 246. I really expected him to take a leap this year, and he hasn't done it. But he's a tall,
only
lanky.
20 years old still.
And that's the thing. Like, he's always been playing, you know, up a league. He's one of those guys who, when he was, I think, 16, he was playing, or 17, he was playing
he's
with the Gulf
been
Coast League.
The youngest player in his, like, when he was at Lakewood, he was the youngest player in the league. So he's used to it. But at some point, you got to step it up, and whether it means that you put on weight or you lift weights or whatever, but it kind of looks like he's fizzled out a little bit.
Yeah, unfortunately. But I think if, you know, he's got a nice, smooth swing, if he can kind of put it all together, he puts the ball in play a lot. I just think it's a matter of just putting on weight. And as we're seeing the NBA draft, though, putting on weight is not as simple as just eating. So, I mean, for some guys, it just doesn't go there. And then we'll just move on to Lakewood. The one guy we talked about, Josh Tobias, when we went on there, Jose Pujols has been – he was the big –
another power bat, prospect.
The big power bat last year at Williamsport. He was the guy who, like, he's kind of a boomer bust guy. He's either going to hit a home run or he's just going to – get it out, but
yeah, the approach is what Like he has great raw power. So what you're seeing is when he's guessing right or it's a mistake from a pitcher, he's hitting it a far away.
But I believe he has 10 home runs in 247 this year. Yep, 10 home runs. He's a guy who, if once again, projecting very far in the future, but if he can fine tune his approach to the plate, he could be a guy you could see you know at the major league level.
Absolutely. Two pitchers that I like in Clearwater are Tyler Vizza.
Yeah, he was like a 36th round pick or something
like
that
in the 30s,
high school.
But
he was out of high school.
Yes.
Which was huge.
It's tough when you're looking at single A because there's such a noticeable jump between single A and double A to where, like you said, double A, you have some guys that played in the majors and you have other guys that are going to be in the majors. Like you have real deal prospects. And then you look at single A and you have guys that, I mean, you'll have 25-year-old guys that haven't played above single A in a long time. And you know that they're not much of a chance that they're going to be doing it. But Vizza has a guy that as a starting pitcher, he has a chance. He does. It's so hard to project some of these younger guys unless they're high draft picks. But he's got a chance to, he's pitched very well this year. So he's one of those guys, if you're keeping an eye on a pitcher, it's single A Clearwater. He's one guy. And the other one is, as I try to pull up what they have right here, is El Nuri Garcia.
Of course.
Left-hander, got good stuff, still just doesn't turn 22 until later this year. He's from the Dominican Republic. He's been with the Phillies since he was in their Dominican team in 2012. So he's kind of made the climb. He was at Lakewood last year, Clearwater this year. So you're seeing a guy that has really good stuff from the left-hand side. Not a high strikeout guy, but also a guy that doesn't walk many people.
A guy at Clearwater that I actually like, he's a relief pitcher, local kid, Temple University, is Matt Hockenberry, and he's done really, really well out of the pen. It seems like you're kind of looking at me like he's not.
No, I'm not. It's funny just because I follow him too because of the local connection.
But he was drafted, I think, in the ninth round a couple years ago, and it seems like every year, like you go through 2014 Williamsport, he had a 2.35. The next year in Lakewood, he had 2.24. This year in Clearwater, 1.59 in 15 games. And he's a guy who really
got a chance.
Yeah, a lot of people don't follow relief pitchers in minor leagues, but a lot of, you know, not every starter is going to be end up being a starting pitcher at the major league level. And this is a guy I'm actually pretty surprised they haven't moved him to Reading. They did for a game just to fill in for an injury, but he's a guy who, you know, to look out for. Is there anybody else that we have not covered? I mean, Cornelius Randolph started the season at Lakewood and he struggled a little bit. He's a former 10th overall pick last year out of Georgia who everybody said that this guy is bad. And that was another guy who he was a shortstop in high school. You mentioned how the best athlete's going to be a shortstop.
Right, now he's going to be left field because he's not even close to being a good enough athlete.
Exactly. He got injured. He's going to start to swing.
A shoulder
off.
Injury.
He's going to start to swing off the tee next week, the manager said over in Lakewood. But is there anybody else that we haven't covered? I think we pretty much got everybody, right?
Well, we got plenty of time in the offseason here when we do post-draft conversation.
Yeah, look, the Phillies have not been fun to watch the past couple of years. This year, it's been a little bit better because they flashed a little bit. They're kind of showing their true colors right now. But the future is very, very bright for the organization. And most of that is because of the trades they made. They were set up. But also because of this upcoming draft. It's a new regime at the helm. If you can get out to a game at Reading, at Lehigh Valley, at Lakewood, I thoroughly suggest doing it because it's not only affordable, but you're going to see these guys relatively soon at the major league level contributing in a big way. So
absolutely, double A. But I can just tell you from going out to the Reading Stadium, especially with the talent they have on this team, you're going to see a kid, Dylan Cousins, that one day you may say, just like if you saw Ryan Howard at Reading, you went and saw him play, you may say that you're seeing a guy that, I'm not saying Ryan Howard, but he's got the potential to be a guy like Ryan Howard.
No, and if you have kids, you'll be able to, you know, you'll be able to have him say, which is cool. You know, when I was 12, I saw Dylan Cousins play at Reading. I used to do it with my friends all the time. You know, I saw this guy, my best friend, he's a huge J.A. Happ fan because why? He saw him at Reading when he was, you know, a no-nothing prospect. So if you can get out to the games, definitely do it. I thoroughly suggest it. That'll do it for us. The MLB draft is once again tomorrow at 7 p.m. The midday show, Rob and Harry, they will have draft expert Jonathan Mayo on. He will be on the draft coverage on MLB Network. He will be on at 11 o'clock, so definitely tune in for that. He knows a lot more about the prospects than we do, and he will have inside information on who the Phillies might be going with the number one overall pick. I'm Pat Egan, and I appreciate John Mark stepping in. You can hear him every day on the morning show, 6 to 10. Anything else you got to add?
Nope.
All right, that'll do it for us.